Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:24 PM that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 5th. And China was up again another percent in here today. It's pretty much unwound its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. But this is also indicative of the support that's coming through from the Chinese government to support the market. And now the question is, how much further are we going to see it rally before the market starts to price in the drag that the slowdown in economic growth is likely to have? I think it's more likely than not that China is going to range, just because of the time that's going to be required to differentiate between the winners and losers from the provision of liquidity versus the drag that the response to the coronavirus is going to necessitate. What's interesting right now is that we're starting to get more concrete mortality figures, although it's certainly nothing compared to a concrete figure, because the Chinese government, and one of the interesting things as well, is that Xi Jinping has pretty much disappeared. He called another meeting of the Politburo over the course of the last 24 hours, but he has been shuttered up and not really appearing in front of cameras for the last couple of weeks. So he doesn't want to be associated with the response to the coronavirus. Much more, they're trying to decide convince people that we're all in this together. But of course, the people of Hubei province are taking the brunt of it. So far, statistics that have come out are to the effect that the mortality rate inside Hubei is something approaching 3, and that 3% is still extraordinarily large. But outside of Hubei and the rest of China, it's about 0.16, which is slightly worse than the normal flu. But 3 to 1 is 30 times more deadly than the normal flu. Or 3% is 30 times more deadly than the seasonal flu. Obviously, that is something that is going to have an effect. But what China needs to start doing is getting back to work, and what they have done essentially has been to appropriate one of Gilead's drugs, Remdesivir. And the question here is Gilead going to reap any kind of economic value from sharing its intellectual property with China? Obviously, there is a humanitarian motive for both companies and philanthropists to extend some assistance to China. But the normal course of events would be to accept that help with open arms and to give credit where credit is due. Instead, what it looks like is the Chinese government are using this as an opportunity to even further extend their intellectual property theft. And that's essentially why Gilead pulled back so sharply over the last 2 days. Now, it has bounced from the region of the trend mean, and the question now is whether it is going to be able to sustain this move. We certainly have base formation characteristics. There is the potential that if it can sustain a move above the $69 region, then we're back in a demand-dominated environment. There has been a prolonged period, almost 3 years now, where it has failed to break below $60. And the compression in the volatility of trading, particularly over the last 12 months, would suggest that Humira, at least, is continuing to lend some assistance in terms of valuation. What they need is an additional source of income to send the share higher. What I thought was quite ironic in here today was Biogen was up 17%, and even that was off the high. But what the reason for it was because they prevailed in an intellectual property suit, which is the exact opposite reason for why Gilead was pulling back. But when you start to combine what's going on in the biotechnology sector, then this index has got first step above the base characteristics. And it's within shooting distance of the peak put in 2015. I think it's worth highlighting that biotech generally tends to be highly cyclical. And the fact that it is now starting to move to outperformance, it's one of the few areas of the technology sector that has not been affected by the subscription business model. The most important thing about the subscription business model from a forecasting perspective is, on the one hand, it makes forecasting the earnings of the related companies much easier, and that commands a higher valuation, and that's what has afforded the analysts the ability to bid up their prices. On the other hand, it takes them out of the cyclical sector and puts them much more into the category of utility type cash flows with growth potential. So that's almost the best of all possible worlds, and it's one of the reasons why Microsoft has been taking off on the upside. But cyclicals have generally tended to be lead indicators, and they do tend to do very well in the latter stages of a bull market, which is why people have historically looked at technology. But that's not going to be valid for the companies that have adopted the subscription business model. But biotech is still very cyclical, and therefore it is worth paying, I think, a lot of attention to. And semiconductor demand is also highly cyclical, and it is also continuing to benefit here. We've had a substantial rebound in the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index over the course of the last three sessions. That's really quite impressive. I think we can also see that this pullback we've seen was somewhat larger than the one seen in November, December, and in September, October, pretty similar in size to the one put in July, August. And we've had a very clear rebound in here to confirm a low of near-term significance. So that's the most recent of the higher reaction lows, and as long as it's holding, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. The NASDAQ index was earlier in at new high territory, gave up most of the advance in here today. That was quite different to the performance of the S&P 500, which gapped higher and then improved upon the performance during the day. And the differentiator between the two is Tesla. And Tesla was down $152 in here today, having been as high as $960 yesterday. It closed out the day at $746. So this is a substantial pullback. Investors are, I think, the rationalization that we're seeing for this move is because the rollout of the Model 3 will be curtailed because of the coronavirus. But the much bigger picture here is that there have been clear examples of competition to come up with the most aggressive bullish forecast for Tesla. And ARK Invest took the prize earlier this week by saying it was going to go to 7,000. Now, when a share accelerates higher, analysts come under an extraordinary amount of pressure to up their targets. Because if you're still bearish and you have got a price target of 60, and that representing more than a 90% decline from where current prices are, well, that obviously is telling us that someone really does have a very bearish perspective. But it's worth considering that all of the most bullish forecasts have been updated in the last week, and all of them have exceeded $600. Some of them are even still above where the price is today, but people have been racing to try and catch up. Now, the way to make a name for yourself in a bull market is to become the biggest bull in the bull market, and ARK Invest has certainly prevailed in that regard. Talking about robo-taxis and autonomous driving is all well and good, but none of us knows when that in fact is going to be delivered. So that's somewhere out in the future. When it is eventually delivered, it's going to be one of the most transformative factors ever in terms of the global economy. It's going to represent a massive source of job cuts from the millions of drivers out there, but it's also going to represent a massive productivity gain. So that does suggest that it is something that we do need to pay attention to, but it is certainly not going to happen this year. And there is the clear potential that Tesla is going to have to engage in additional capital spending. It's still a niche provider of cars. If it's going to become a major provider of cars, they're going to have to build additional manufacturing capacity. And that's expensive. And what it means is that the profits upon which it has been running over the course of the last month are going to be put back into question. For a high-growth company to be concentrating on profits isn't particularly rational or indeed desirable from a growth perspective, investors' way of viewing it, because if they're going to become a major producer, they're going to have to spend a lot more money. And that does suggest we're going to be in for a more volatile ride in here. I thought it was particularly interesting today that people are comparing the advance in Tesla to what we saw in Bitcoin all the way back in 2017. But what was interesting is that Bitcoin was up $566 in here today, and it is bouncing now from the region of the trend mean. And it has very clearly broken the downtrend from the peak back in June. And it has held a sequence of higher reaction lows since early January. We do know that the halving, which is going to be the halving of the reward for mining Bitcoin, is coming up in the next few months. And generally speaking, that supply inelasticity argument becomes much more fashionable as we approach these types of dates. So there is the potential we're going to see additional upside on Bitcoin, and that is lending support to just about all of the cryptocurrencies in here. Then when we think about the gold market, well, gold prices are back around the $1,550 area, and they were a little steadier in here today. Platinum prices were up about $20, and coming back towards this $1,000 level once more. I think this is still a really quite bullish looking pattern. This looks like a consolidation in the region of a very big psychological level over the course of the last 3 years. When platinum can eventually sustain a move above $1,000, we can very clearly conclude we're back in a, or at least we'll have the evidence to support the conclusion that we're back in a demand dominated environment. But I do think that it is likely platinum will eventually close its undervaluation relative to gold. And that's still really very substantial. And it's even more oversold relative to palladium. Palladium prices were up a dollar in here today. They have bounced over the course of the last couple of days, encountered a little resistance around the $2,400 area. I think it is likely we're going to see at least some consolidation, considering just how wide the overextension is relative to the trend mean and how high the palladium price is. Certainly, we've had the loss of momentum. When we think about the copper price, it got all the way down to test the 250 area, and then it bounced over the last 2 days. On each day, it hasn't quite been able to hold all of the advance, but it is certainly bouncing in here. What's also, I think, rather interesting now is what's going on in the grains and beans and then the related seed and fertilizer companies. Soybeans is right in the region of the lows from back in December. 850 cents has been an area of support over the course of the last year, but it's been an area of resistance for most of the preceding decades. And we can see that prior to the mid-1970s, soybeans had never been able to sustain a move above about 375 cents. Subsequent to that, 500 became the area of support, and 1,000 became the area of resistance during the cyclical bull and bear markets. Then in 2007, we had this incredibly impressive breakout. Now the upper side of the range is around 1770, and the lower side of the range is closer to about 850. So we're very close to the lower side of the range. What we've certainly had evidence of over the course of the last while have been that the grains and beans have led the interest in the fertilizers shares. But Mosaic has rebounded over the course of the last week, while soybeans is still right on the lows, and that's a break in the commonality between the two. Mosaic now is back testing this $22 level. It's done the round trip from 22 down to 18 over the course of the last 3 weeks. If it can sustain a move above 22, well, then we're back in a demand-dominated environment, and we can start talking about the potential for a base formation completion. Then turning to another sector that is, I think, interesting, particularly in view of Tesla, Adient is looking increasingly likely that it has now broken out of its base formation. And this is for the one of the biggest suppliers in the world of car seats. So if demand for car seats is improving, despite the fact that we've had Ford pulling back really very violently in here today because they can't meet their production deadlines, and they are experiencing some of the same problems that Tesla had a year ago, and GM is scrambling to try and come up with an electric vehicle that people will buy. But if the demand for car seats is starting to pick up, well, then that is an indicator that there's demand for cars. So that's also supportive of the view that the global economy is back starting to turn around. Now, if that's the case, then China, it's likely that China is going to continue to stimulate, but that the market will more likely than not range. But India's market has bounced pretty emphatically over the course of the last week. Then what was also coming through on the news wires ahead of beginning the broadcast was that Brazil has just cut interest rates. The Brazilian real is still in the region of its lows, and cutting interest rates is unlikely to act as a clear support. But when we look at the Brazilian stock market, it has continued to trend higher over the course of the last 4 years. And while there is a short-term overbought condition, this is still an uptrend. I think the move that we've had in the 10-year Treasury yield really does stand out on the weekly chart. And it does represent clear resistance around the 1.5% level again. This is the, I think, third time now in the space of 6 months where we've had clear dynamic upward dynamics from the region of 1.5%. And 1.5% was a clear area of resistance back in 2016 and 2012. I think that there's the clear potential here that there is resistance here, that there is a reluctance by investors to buy treasuries when the yield has compressed so much. Of course, we're still in an economic expansion, and the demand for a safe haven has certainly moderated over the last few days. That should rob the bond markets of the safe haven demand. That's one of the reasons why gold has pulled back as well. But the fact that 1.5% continues to offer resistance, I think, is important. It does suggest that this ranging that's been going on now for a decade is still in play, and that if we are going to see the global economy continue to prosper because of the massive quantities of liquidity that are being provided, then that should correspond with higher yields overall. Then when we look at the high yield sector, well, the spread rebounded and completely unwound the significant contraction in December, but it has not pushed through the 400 basis point level, and it is not surging higher. And provided it is not surging through 500 basis points, then the outlook for the stock market is likely to remain sanguine. When we start to think about what it is that we're being presented with, it's a Goldilocks scenario in terms of global liquidity. And European markets have rebounded pretty impressively here from the 400-point level. When we think about the FTSE 100, then it has also rebounded from the region of the trend mean. I think there is the clear potential that Europe can play catch-up, simply because it is trading at a lower valuation on a relative basis. That's equally true of Japan, and the Nikkei has also been steadying here from the region of the trend mean, but this hasn't looked like anything other than a consolidation in the region of the upper side of the two-year range now for most of the last 2 months. A sustained move back above 24,000 would confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. So there is still the potential here that despite everything that people are worried about, it is monetary policy beats most other factors most of the time, and liquidity remains ample. And against that background, where yields are still below that on equities, then historically that has been an opportunity to increase equity positions. And I think that is one of the primary reasons for equity strength recently. I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.